we've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curb Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe. Happy Canada Day. And welcome to the Illegal Curb Hockey Show. We have 2 hours for you on this Saturday morning, a comprehensive NHL free agency preview leading up to the magic hour of 11 a.m. Central Time, when the signings that have been rumored and have been discussed can officially take place. There's been a litany of rumors, some of them going as far to say they're done, just not yet official. And they will become official at 11 o'clock this morning. But for the next 2 hours, we'll bring you the latest news from a very busy day in the NHL and a very busy week that has been since the draft. I say good morning to my colleague on the left, Ezra Ginsberg, the man on the far left, Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, happy Canada Day to you both. It's good to see you.
Yeah, happy Canada Day to you guys, too, and to Rory as well, and to everybody listening. And, you know, you mentioned that some of the signings have already been leaked by some of the insiders, Drew, but there's also a lot of players to come that we're not aware about. So we know that the Jets are going to sign a goaltender. We'll get into who that's going to be a little bit. I think it's no secret who that goaltender is going to be, but it's going to be a fun couple of hours here leading up to Joel and Rick taking over.
Absolutely. Joel Marcoux, Rick Ralph will bring you the actual live free agency coverage starting at 11 immediately following us. Dave, good morning to you.
Thanks, guys. Little Canada 150. It's an exciting time to be a Canadian, and you know, you're always thankful to be a Canadian on this great day.
I gotta say, before we get in deep into the hockey, because we're gonna go hard in the hockey and we don't have a lot of time today, it's a very busy 2 hours. As you're wearing an IC shirt, very, you know, that just speaks Canadiana. Dave Minuk is wearing both a Minnesota Golden Gophers hat and a retro Washington Bullets t-shirt. So I think you forgot the memo on Canada Day here, Dave, that you're supposed to display a little bit of patriotism.
Yeah, but there's red in it.
There is red in it. That's fine.
There's red, maroon, I think, and red in my shirt. What do you want from me?
Well, maybe a little Canada,
flag? Dave also was wearing a red hoodie.
Okay.
So he's actually wearing triple red.
Triple red. Well, yeah. Or depending on, is maroon red or is maroon purple?
I believe it's a deviation of some sort of red.
Okay.
Or maybe it's made with red.
Let's get right into the Winnipeg Jets, and the rumors abound that Steve Mason will be the goaltender the Jets sign as of 11 a.m. this morning. That's the expectation. All of the insiders, of course, Bob McKenzie, the insider's insider, has been on top of that, saying Mason is very much likely coming here to Winnipeg to be the Jets, to be a tandem with Connor Hellebuyck.
Jeff Hamilton was the Winnipeg Free Press was the first person to break it.
Yeah, Jeff, of course, broke it. It's been verified, etc. No official terms on the deal because that can't happen until 11 o'clock this morning, of course. So your thoughts on Mason. We heard that it was maybe going to be Brian Elliott. We heard Mason. There was some fanciful thought that maybe somehow Marc-Andre Fleury might end up here, or a guy like Ryan Miller, a veteran backstop. Your thoughts on Steve Mason being the guy that the Jets choose to be the 1A or the 1B, whatever, however you want to call it, with Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah, and it's the second goaltender with the last name Mason who is now going to put on that Winnipeg Jets jersey. So, you know what, Drew, and you mentioned that we're expecting in a couple of hours' time for the Jets to officially announce the signing of Steve Mason. I'd expect it to be a two-year deal. And that's also been previously reported, probably in the neighborhood of $4 million a year, right? So I like the signing, and we've talked about it on this program for over 2 months now, the need for the Jets to bring in a veteran goaltender. And you mentioned, you know, Brian Elliott was another candidate. When you're talking about a guy like Steve Mason, he didn't have a good year last year, and he's struggled at times in his career. And at 29 years old, and with the experience that he's had, 400-plus NHL games, I believe he's played more than 50 games in a season 7 times, 8 times, if I'm not mistaken. So when you're talking
seven times more than 50, and he had one season where he played 46 games. So you're very close.
And most importantly, Drew, he brings in the experience, right? And he brings in that veteran number one previous experience. So for Steve Mason, is he maybe as sexy of a pick as Marc-Andre Fleury, who just won a Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins? Maybe not. But the reality is goaltending was an issue for the Jets last year, and they needed to bring in a veteran presence. They needed to bring in a goaltender who had played number one for a team for preferably more than 1 year. Mm-hmm. Steve Mason has done that with the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Philadelphia Flyers. So he's a quality goaltender. Is he a top 10 goaltender in the NHL? No, but I would say, you know, you could put him in the category of maybe top 20 goaltenders. And I know a lot of people have been looking at his stats and his save percentage and his goals against last year. Well, the reality is a couple of years ago, he had a goals against of 2.2 and a save percentage of 928. That was back in 14-15. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a good goaltender. And again, I know that, you know, other fans out there wanted a guy like Antti Raanta or a Scott Darling or maybe a Ben Bishop. But the reality is, by signing Steve Mason, Dave, the Jets' goaltending gets better.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And I think that, you know, this is the move that probably should have happened the year before because, you know, we saw what happened with a lack of real consistency in net. And I'm not blaming Connor Hellebuyck because Connor Hellebuyck's a young goalie, and I thought it was a lot last year to thrust on his shoulders to be that number one guy. I mean, it just doesn't happen very often. So, you know, obviously, I think most people would have preferred to see a veteran goalie in place last year to kind of shoulder that burden and to really be an assist to Connor Hellebuyck as he develops into that role. You don't really generally, like I said, you don't generally thrust that goaltender into that position. You kind of let him grow into it, let him take it from someone like a Steve Mason, who's there as kind of a stopgap measure for the team. So I agree with you. As I like the signing. I like the fact that it's a 2-year thing. I don't think it's a insult to Connor Hellebuyck. You know, the fact is that you have to earn your stripes in the NHL. At least you should. And again, like I said, Connor Hellebuyck has kind of now eclipsed that over 150 professional hockey games in both the AHL and NHL. But I think this is now an opportunity for him to learn. I'm not saying he automatically defaults into that 1B role, but I mean, to get a guy like Steve Mason, who last year in Philadelphia talked about platoons not working and wanting to be a number one guy, you give this guy an opportunity to kind of have a bounce back year, to really show what he's got, to make himself a valuable asset. And then again, you're giving Connor Hellebuyck, you're relieving him of some of that pressure, and you're allowing him to properly develop. Because if you want him to be a goalie of your future, you really, like I said, you can't shred his confidence and say, oh, I mean, again, the fact that people are blaming everything on Connor Hellebuyck is doesn't make sense to me. But again, if you listened, and I mean, I was in the room last year, and you listened to the team, you heard the frustration they had with the fact that they were getting scored on as much as they were. And again, that's a function of the entire team. But again, that was clearly coming out. So I think this is kind of, it's a good move for Connor Hellebuyck, I think, and it's also a good move. It sends a good message to the veterans on this team.
Do you think that one of the two goalies has an inside track on being the so-called number one goalie, or is it going to be a situation where, you know, whoever plays one game, if they get a win, they get another start the next game? Or do you think that is this a, you know, a clear 1A, 1B, or is there a number one and a number two in this situation?
Drew, me personally, I don't think there is a defined 1A and 1B. And, you know, because Steve Mason has the 400-plus games of NHL experience, he played 58 games for the Flyers last year, you would say he has the inside track on being the number one goaltender just because he has been a number one goaltender for most of his career, right? But the best case scenario for the Jets is they have two goaltenders playing really well, and Connor Hellebuyck, who is really the future in goal for the Jets, or they want him to be the future in goal. He plays more than 40 games. He plays 50 games. So I think there is a good chance that you're going to see these two goaltenders split time, but really it's going to come down to which goaltender plays better. If it's Steve Mason, he's going to get more starts. If it's Connor Hellebuyck, he's going to get more starts, right? So right now, even though Steve Mason played more games last year than Connor Hellebuyck did, and certainly played more games over the span of his career than Connor Hellebuyck has, I don't think there is a defined 1A or 1B. I think it's 1A and 1A.
And I think if you look at it, from the Jets' perspective, they had 4 wins for Michael Hutchinson in that backup role in the first 70 games. And then, of course, he had the 5 in the final 10. But the fact is that, you know, if the Jets get, I think Hutchinson played, what, in 20 games in the first 70 for Winnipeg? And so if the Jets have half those wins, I mean, where are they? Right. So, sure. Again, I'm not putting this all on Michael Hutchinson. The defense wasn't great last year either. But the fact is that they let in a lot of goals. And you know, you could, again, I'm going back to it, but you could get that general sense that the team, there was a lot of frustration from that from that fact. So I think this will remove that. I don't know that there's a defined role. But I, again, when you're getting a veteran like Steve Mason, I suspect he looked at this as an opportunity, like I said, a short window, because he knows that the team has probably told him that Connor Hellebuyck is their goalie of the future. It allows Eric Comrie to stay with the Moose and not have any sort of, you know, notion that he's going to be rushed into the NHL. I mean, I know everyone says that they're ready, but again, it's not a bad thing to allow these guys to germinate. There's a reason why generally goalies don't take on, you know, they're not the same as forwards and defensemen, who obviously take longer than forwards to just kind of jump into that role as 18, 19, 20 year olds. There's a reason why these guys play in the AHL for a few years and then they come into the NHL and generally into a backup role, and then they switch over to, you know, a permanent number sure. one position.
Let me ask you this. So if you look back at, take the last three seasons, which I think is a pretty reasonable sample size, Steve Mason over the last 3 years has the sixth best 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL at .932. That's, you know, over the last three seasons. Conversely, when you look at shorthanded situations, he has the 48th best save percentage in the entire NHL. That's second last. Only Jonas Enroth, who only played 72 games, has a worse save percentage in shorthanded situations. Mason is down there with an .834 save percentage. For a team like the Jets, who takes an abundance of penalties, how concerning is that to you that they're reportedly signing a goaltender who struggles also in shorthanded situations?
I think it's concerning, Drew. And when you look at the even strength save percentage, if you talk to, you know, those who look at goaltending stats, that is the more important one.
Right.
The even strength save percentage.
And in that case, Steve Mason, very good, sixth best in the last 3 years in the NHL.
And if you look at Steve Mason's numbers, and I know there are a lot of Jets fans out there looking at Steve Mason's career numbers. He's been in the NHL for, what, 10 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Most of those years split between the Columbus Blue Jackets. No, all of those years split between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Philadelphia Flyers. And he obviously came in and was an amazing rookie, had those 10 shutouts in his rookie year back in the day.
Calder Trophy winner back in 08, 09.
So when you look at his numbers, they are up and down. And the Philadelphia Flyers were not a good team last year. And if you look at Claude Giroux's numbers and you look at Jakub Voracek's numbers, they weren't good either. So, I mean, Steve Mason had bad numbers, but he was on a bad team. Now, I mentioned 2014-15, his save percentage was .928. That was a top save percentage in the NHL for a goaltender that was playing that many games, right? So back to your question, though, about the PK save percentage, I mean, it's a concern. I mean, he has struggled in those situations, and part of that would have to do with the team in front of him. But when you look at overall his numbers, I think you're getting an upgrade in the backup goaltender position over Michael Hutchinson. And there's a chance that Steve Mason is even the number one goaltender.
Dave, concern. I mean, the Jets' penalty kill has been atrocious, really, for much of the last, you know, three, four, five seasons. For the most part, the Jets are a team that isn't very good on the penalty kill and takes too many penalties. And now, reportedly, they're signing a goaltender who also struggles in shorthanded situations.
Yeah, no, I think as he touched on it, right, I think it is a concern. But I think you have to look at the totality of the player you're getting. And you look at the even strength save percentage. And that's, of course, the bigger number. And look, the fact is that this is a team that took too many penalties the last few years, and you just can't do that if you want to be productive. And they've talked about it, but they really have to put that, you know, into practice. And again, you just can't be in the penalty box as much as they were. Now, I think the Jets are going to get, you know, faster, and they're going to probably take less penalties that you would from being a little bit of a slower team and potentially, you know, allowing guys, you know, using your stick, which is the big problem with a lot of the penalties that the Jets take. So perhaps that becomes less of an issue this year. And again, it's something that they have to fix, because you just can't be a playoff-bound team if you take that many penalties.
When we come back, we'll touch on the Jets' search for a left-handed defenseman. They're buying out Mark Stewart, and we'll start previewing the free agency from the point of view of the Jets' Central Division competitors. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. We want you to get in on the conversation. You can do so via our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. Or if you prefer to text us in studio, you can do that. Send your comments to 129090. That's one more time. Text 129090 with your comments. Standard messaging rates do apply. Your thoughts on Steve Mason coming to Winnipeg, expected to be announced at 11 a.m. this morning or shortly thereafter. We shift our focus now away from the goaltending to the Jets' search for a left-handed defenseman. Earlier in the week, it was tweeted by Darren Dreger that the Jets had been in conversation with Carl Alsner. Some people feel he's the preeminent left-hand defenseman available in free agency. Sounds like Alsner is going to the Montreal Canadiens. That's going to be announced later this morning. It's a 5-year deal for Carl Alsner to go to the Montreal Canadiens. So it doesn't appear as though he's going to be coming to Winnipeg. No surprise from my perspective. The Jets may have been talking to him, but I would have been blown away if Carl Alsner would have been on the Jets' blue line.
Yeah, I didn't think Carl Alsner was going to sign here, Drew, and that really has to do with the fact that the Jets have a lot of money tied up in their deal already, right?
Yeah.
So you're talking about Dustin Byfuglien, Toby Enstrom, Tyler Myers. Jacob Trouba obviously has a bridge deal in place right now, but they want to re-sign him to a long-term contract. So I didn't really think Carl Alsner was ever really a serious candidate to come here. That was just me personally. When you're talking about some of the other left-D options, they don't really blow you out of the water, right? So you're talking about guys like Dmitry Kulikov and Patrick Wierkocz. For me, I would prefer Patrick Wierkocz. Played for the Colorado Avalanche last year, played 5 seasons in the Ottawa Senators organization. He's got some good size. He's a guy that's obviously not going to contribute that much offensively, but for the Jets, they need a defensive presence. They need a guy who is a steadying D presence. And for a guy like Patrick Wierkocz, he's most likely going to be your third pairing defenseman, because we know that on the depth chart right now, it's Josh Morrissey and Toby Enstrom 1-2 on the left side, right? So if you're going to go out and acquire a defenseman, it's most likely going to be a guy like Patrick Wierkocz, Dave, a guy who you get maybe on a 1 or 2 year deal. You don't have to pay a ridiculous amount of money, and a guy that adds depth to your decor.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think Wierkocz is a perfect target for Winnipeg and something along those lines, because right now you don't really have those defensive prospects who are going to jump up and take that spot right now with Winnipeg. And, you know, yesterday Coach Maurice was talking about it at the Iceplex after day 5 of development camp about, you know, would he move Byfuglien or Myers to the left side, and you really got the impression he said I don't want to misquote him, but it was something like out of necessity, essentially saying, you know, if we have injuries, we're going to move him there, but that's not our plan. So the plan is obviously to keep those guys on the right side along with Jacob Trouba. You've got Morrissey on the left side, you've got Enstrom on the left side, and really it's the question of Mark is who is going to be that guy. Now a Wierkocz to me seamlessly moves in there. He's a nice steady player, and like Ezzy, I agree, he would be a good on the, you know, maybe second, I guess, pairing, or most likely a third pairing with maybe a Tyler Myers, and then have Byfuglien with Enstrom because they have that familiarity in the second pairing, and then you have Trouba with Morrissey. So to me, that's a pretty solid Jets defense if you think about it, right? Because that's a lot of experience. You've got, you know, a little bit of youth with Morrissey and Trouba, but really they're not that young anymore. And that's an ideal setting. Now, again, do you have that tremendous amount of depth? No, but they may be able to add some. Then you don't put a Ben Chiarot into a position he probably shouldn't be in. You've got Ben Chiarot, you know, maybe as your seventh guy and you know, that sort of idea. And then you're not going that far down unless you really get into a situation like the reality is this. Nobody anticipated, including Nelson Nauge, that Nelson Nauge in his first year pro, still learning the game with the Manitoba Moose, was going to be playing for the Winnipeg Jets. That was simply out of necessity. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that now you really don't want to have to obviously get into that situation. So we'll see what happens with Winnipeg. But I like a Wierkocz to kind of fill that role.
Yeah, Dave, and if the Jets do end up signing Dmitry Kulikov, I mean, that would be an upgrade for the Jets on defense. I just haven't been a big fan of Kulikov throughout his career. When he came into the Florida Panthers organization, you know, he was putting up good numbers. He was a former first-round pick back in 2009. That was the year that John Tavares went first overall. And, you know, he just really hasn't turned out to be that top-pairing defenseman that the Panthers thought he was going to be, and that's one of the reasons why he ended up going over to Buffalo, and he didn't have a very good year last year. He had 5 points in 47 games, but, I mean, Kulikov is a guy that skates pretty well, and he would be an upgrade. We know that Mark Stewart has been bought out. He's not coming back. So, I mean, he would be an upgrade for the Jets. He'd kind of be that fifth, sixth defenseman, right? Maybe seventh defenseman, preferably. But if it's between Patrick Wierkocz and Dmitry Kulikov, I'm taking Wierkocz. Another guy to throw out there, Drew, And we've got Ken Weeb coming up in about 10 minutes. He mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, is Brian Campbell.
Sure.
And Brian Campbell looks like he's not coming back with Chicago. And again, I don't know if Chevy and the Jets management, you know, have any interest in a guy like Brian Campbell. But, you know, he certainly didn't work out in Chicago like they thought he was going to work out. But for a third pairing defenseman, you know, I don't know if you can get him on a 1 year deal. You know, maybe you get him for 1 year, $2 million. I'm not sure, you know, what Brian Campbell would be willing to accept. But, I mean, I think he's still got a lot to give.
Even at his advanced age, you think he still has something left in the tank to prove.
I just don't know if that's a fit or if the Jets have contacted him, but sure. He is a guy that Ken Weeb mentioned.
Weber mentioned, and we'll talk to Ken, like you said, and coming up in about 7 minutes' time about that. Let's shift our focus away briefly from the Winnipeg Jets. Or actually, one more thing on the Jets. Surprised they bought out Mark Stewart. First time they've ever used a buyout. It's a guy who only had a year left on his contract. You know, they have a lot of salary cap space. So were you surprised to see that the Jets bought out Mark Stewart? I mean, admittedly, his NHL playing days are probably behind him, but were you surprised to see them officially use a buyout?
Well, you know, you never know, Drew. I mean, he could get a contract with another team, but yeah, I was a little bit surprised. And, you know, having talked to Mark Stewart and met him in the past, I mean, I have only great things to say about Mark Stewart, and you're not really going to find that many people who are going to say otherwise. He's a team guy, and we know that his play on the ice reflected that, blocking shots, dropping the gloves, and all of that, right? So, I mean, his role with the organization had diminished, right? Paul Maurice talked about it yesterday at the Iceplex. So I think for Mark Stewart and the organization, this was the best course of action to take.
Yeah, and I was a little bit surprised. It would seem to be indicative of the fact that the Jets are maybe getting ready to make some sort of move today, because you're right, Drew. The Jets don't have a tremendous number of contracts. They don't have a tremendous – they have a lot of salary cap. So where is this going? Why are they doing this? Now, you know, Cap Friendly had it out that they'll still have a cap hit of 1.4 for this season and 583 for next season.
Yeah,
sure. But again, like I said, when you already have a lot of cap, it doesn't really seem to make sense unless – it was just that maybe they talked to Stewart. I mean, it's interesting, and these are the behind-the-scenes things that you don't know. Maybe they had told Stewart, like, look, you're not going to have a role with the team. Are you going to be willing to go to the Moose? He maybe has said no. And then the fact is that you have to, you know, essentially...
They do well by a veteran player and give him an opportunity to go latch on with another team.
Exactly. That's the only thing I can think of, because unless they're planning something that requires a space. But again, like I said, the Jets have a lot of space, so it would seem to be more indicative of the latter than the former, but we'll see.
Let's move on to these Jets Central Division rivals. A lot of them have some UFAs, of course. Let's start with the Chicago Blackhawks. They have been very active leading up to the NHL draft, and then this week as well, we expect that they're going to, you know, be active, because the Blackhawks always are. Bob McKenzie reporting that Patrick Sharp, they're getting the band back together in Chicago. Patrick Sharp rumored to be heading from Dallas back to Chicago after a very injury-plagued season, a down year for Patrick Sharp last year. Supposedly, he's heading back to Chicago. We know the Blackhawks traded Nicholas Chalmerson, Artemi Panarin, and Tyler Motte. That happened late last week, right before the draft. We know Brandon Saad heading back to Chicago from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Laurent Dauphin from the Arizona Coyotes. Connor Murphy and Anton Forsberg. Blackhawks, in terms of free agents that they have, you mentioned Brian Campbell, Ezzy Johnny Oduya, who they had acquired at the trade deadline. He's a UFA. Probably unlikely to return to the Blackhawks at this point. And Andrew Desjardins and Dennis Rasmussen, both two veteran guys. You know, Rasmussen a little bit less of a veteran than Desjardins, but depth guys for the Blackhawks who are UFAs.
Yeah, and the Blackhawks, as you mentioned, Drew, they're going to make some moves today. They're going to acquire a winger. Most likely it's going to be a veteran winger. So you mentioned Patrick Sharp, who obviously has the 3 Stanley Cup rings with the Chicago Blackhawks. Another guy that's been thrown out there is a Justin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You have to also mention Marian Hossa. And they're looking to replace Marian Hossa's offense. And when you're talking about Brian Campbell and Johnny Oduya not coming back, Trevor Van Riemsdyk also went to the Vegas Golden Knights. So I expect the Blackhawks to potentially sign a defenseman. And there have been rumors about Carl Alzner, but that obviously is not going to happen, because it's been reported Alzner has signed a contract with the Montreal Canadiens. So I would expect the Blackhawks to sign a forward, a defenseman, and maybe a goaltender, because right now it looks like Anton Forsberg is their backup goaltender to Corey Crawford. And Anton Forsberg has put up some decent numbers at the American Hockey League level. But right now, maybe the Blackhawks are looking to add a backup goaltender. So the Blackhawks are definitely going to be one of the more active teams in the Central.
moving on to the Colorado Avalanche. They're next up in the Central Division. The rumored goaltender, according to Bob McKenzie, who I recommend, if you haven't yet checked out Bob's Twitter feed this morning, he goes through the litany of signings that he's expecting to occur as of 11 a.m. this morning, and we're going to go through them throughout the course of the show as well.
On July 1st, Drew, you have to be following the insiders.
And
Bob McKenzie, Darren Dreger, Pierre LeBrun, if you're not on Twitter, just tune in at 11 o'clock on TSN, but if you're on Twitter, you got to follow those guys.
Absolutely. Make sure you look for the check mark, the verified check mark, so you don't get faked out by any of those fake accounts.
Catfished.
Anyways, Jonathan Bernier last year was a backup goaltender for the Anaheim Ducks. He's supposedly heading to the Colorado Avalanche, and the Avalanche have a number of free agents as well. Fedor Tuukka, John Mitchell, Mikhail Grigorenko, Patrick Wierkoch, who we just mentioned, Rene Bork, a lot of free agents. But the big question for the Avalanche continues to be Matt Duchene. And that is sort of hanging over the franchise, because it's hard to believe they can start the season with Matt Duchene still on their team, because this is a saga that's been going on now for almost a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Matt Duchene is traded either today or at some point this summer. And, you know, you mentioned some of the names. Fedor Tuukka, I mean, he's towards the end of his career. I don't know how much interest there's going to be in Fedor Tuukka. Mikhail Grigorenko is an interesting guy to me. He's only 23 years old, was drafted in the first round 5 years ago. He's a guy who obviously didn't work out in Colorado, didn't work out in Buffalo. The Montreal Canadiens have been rumored to be interested in Mikhail Grigorenko, kind of similar type of situation as Alex Radulov or Alex Semin, kind of a reclamation project.
Well, Grigorenko was one of the big pieces in the Ryan O'Reilly trade.
Yes.
And that tells you how bad that trade was for Colorado.
Right, and he just hasn't worked out. So maybe he goes to Montreal and, you know, maybe he finds a role there in the bottom six. But as far as some of these other players, I mean, Patrick Wierkoch is a guy that's going to get interest. We talked about Winnipeg potentially signing him. But when you're talking about the Colorado Avalanche, we know, guys, this team is rebuilding. And we knew it was eventual that they were going to lose a lot of these players. And when you talk about Jonathan Bernier, you know, good for him. He gets a backup role behind Semyon Varlamov. But it's going to be an awful team. And I don't expect the Colorado Avalanche to sign many players. The big one is going to be whether or not they move Duchene.
The last team we're going to get to before we're going to bring in Ken Wiebe is the Dallas Stars. We know that they acquired Ben Bishop to shore up their goaltending a number of weeks ago. They acquired Mark Methot from the Vegas Golden Knights. That was late last week. And, of course, this morning, Bob McKenzie reporting Martin Hanzel likely to go up the middle as be one of the centermen there for the Dallas Stars.
And if you think about that, Drew, it replaces Cody Eakin, right?
That's right.
So Martin Hanzel, good signing. He did not work out well for Minnesota in his brief tenure there. When you're talking about the Dallas Stars, Justin Williams has been linked to the Dallas Stars. You're looking at probably bringing in a veteran forward, but aside from that, guys, I don't see Dallas being tremendously active.
No, I don't think they need to be. I think that's what, like, I think Ezzie's right. I think they need to solidify their center, and now that they've done that, they're pretty much set.
Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun joins us next to talk about the free agency from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective, the Mason signing, who's going to fill that left-handed D spot, and much more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. For the next 10 days, Bernstein's Deli is closed, going through some renovations. But be sure to check them out. Coming up July 10th is when they're going to reopen. So be sure to go to the Bernstein's Deli as of July 10th, check out the new renos, get some Illegal Curve sandwiches at that point in time.
Yeah, but for the next 10 days, where am I going to eat?
It's a good question. It's something I've been concerned about your well-being, but then I realized if you starve for 10 days, there's still a little bit of time to go. You got a wedding dress you have to fit into and everything, so I'm not too concerned at that point in time.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, we are pleased to welcome to the program a very good friend of ours. Kenny Wiebe joins us now. Kenny, good morning. How are you? Happy Canada Day.
Oh, yes, gentlemen. I'm awesome. Happy Canada Day to you as well.
Thank you very much for those kind wishes. We bring you on, of course, to discuss free agency, the Winnipeg Jets. We start with the goaltender rumored to be Steve Mason, expected to be made official around 11 a.m. or shortly thereafter this morning when the signings can officially be announced. Would he have been your first choice to shore up the Winnipeg Jets goaltending situation?
First choice of what was available, guys. I think he has the higher ceiling. Obviously, Brian Elliott was the other goalie most closely linked to the Jets here in this reporting period. I know there's been a lot of talk about how good a partner Brian Elliott was with Jake Allen, and not discrediting that one bit. And there's been a lot made of the fact that Steve Mason was quite vocal in saying he would rather have established roles for the Philadelphia Flyers last year. But my intel tells me that Steve Mason was great with both Michael Neuwirth and Anthony Stollers in Philadelphia, and that was just a general statement about wanting a number one role established. So, I mean, I think Steve Mason had a tough year last year, sort of the Flyers. You guys talked about it in the earlier segment. This is a guy that has a .918 save percentage over the last 4 years and has been to the playoffs two times. So, based on what was out there, I think there's no way you can't look at this as an upgrade for the Jets.
Weber, with Steve Mason coming into the Winnipeg Jets organization, does that necessarily mean that he's going to be the number one goaltender next year?
Oh, in my mind, Steve Mason is the number one goaltender without question. Obviously, he still needs to win that job in training camp. But I mean, this is a clear signal, guys, that not that the Jets don't believe in Connor Hellebuck, but that they believe he needs more help. To me, Steve Mason and his agent were quite vocal that they were looking at starting opportunities in this courting period. The Vancouver Canucks were a team that was mentioned, but it sounds like they're going to be happy with Jacob Markstrom as their number one and probably Anders Nielsen as number two. I don't think that Steve Mason comes here. I mean, there's no assurances. You got to win the job. But to me, without question, Steve Mason is coming here to play 50 to 55 games. And if Connor Hellebuck wants the job, he's going to have to wrestle it from Steve Mason, whether that's this year, next year, or somewhere down the road.
Ken, you know, a lot of people were caught by surprise with the Mark Stewart being put on waivers for unconditional buyout. Were you surprised by that, number one? And number two, what do you think the motivation behind that is?
Yeah, somewhat surprised, guys. Let's be honest here. The Jets hadn't used the buyout yet, and Mark Stewart's been a pretty good soldier for this organization. So in that regard, it was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, Mark Stewart was going to be in a big battle to even be the number eight defenseman on the Jets this year. So on that side of things, it's not surprising. But the fact that they went out and bought him out, to me, signifies they would like to be quite active today. And not just today. Let's not forget the Jets, and Brian Little has openly talked about wanting an extension. I mean, that doesn't factor into this year's salary cap. But to me, this is a signal that the Jets plan to be busy today. We know already they've addressed their goaltending need. I think they're going to be looking at left shot D. And let's not forget an experienced forward. I wouldn't be surprised to see a penalty-killing forward come in here today, not at maybe high range, but one of those mid-range players. So, you know, not necessarily Nick Bonino, but a Nick Bonino type, a guy that can give you, you know, maybe double-digit goals and bolster your penalty kill.
Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing free agency and the Winnipeg Jets, of course. 11 a.m. is when free agency officially opens. Ken, you mentioned the left-handed defense position. That's, of course, something everybody has identified as an area that the Jets need to upgrade. Who on the market? We know that Carl Alsner, by the sounds of it, he's going to the Montreal Canadiens. Aaron Ward reported that earlier this morning. Who are you targeting as somebody the Jets may be, you know, in contact with, maybe, you know, close to, if not, you know, going to sign come 11 a.m. this morning?
Yeah, the left shot D has been a little bit more difficult to identify, and probably just because the candidates out there, it's not an overly, you know, top-heavy class, if you will. I think there was some genuine interest from Carl Alsner, but my best guess is that the term and dollar value was probably a little bit too high for the Jets to really be in, to get into a bidding war. I know you guys were talking about Weirkoch. I have him on my list, but, I mean, I think he could be capable, but, I mean, we can't forget Patrick Weirkoch played on the worst team in the NHL last year, guys, and was not qualified. All the Avalanche had to do was offer him a qualifying offer, and he only made $800,000 last year. So I do think he could help the Jets as a value buy, but to expect Patrick Weirkoch to come in and play on the second pairing with Dustin Byfuglien, I don't think that's realistic. Dmitry Kulikov, obviously, is a guy who's been talked about. He has that physical element and can skate. He did have a down year last year. I know you guys talked about that, but he had some pretty good years in Florida, and my understanding is the guys in Florida were pretty happy with him at the time, but you have to know that you're getting the Kulikov from Florida and not the one that played last year in Buffalo. as I mentioned, Brian Campbell is an intriguing guy. I mean, I don't know if he's would consider Winnipeg on a 1-year deal at $3 million or whatever the number is, or $4 million. But I mean, Paul Maurice touched on it yesterday. The thing the Jets have going for them is, as a team that appears to be on the rise, you can say to a free agent like Brian Campbell, our idea is for you to play with Dustin Byfuglien. And if you're near the end of your career, that might appeal to Brian Campbell. I know last year his wife is quite happy in Chicago, and it may be Chicago or bust again, but certainly I would expect the Jets to have made that phone call to see if there was any interest there.
We were just getting away from the Jets for a second. Obviously, all eyes are going to be on Kevin Shattenkirk and where he eventually signs. When you look over to California in San Jose, are you expecting Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton to remain in San Jose? Because there's been a lot of speculation that one or both of those players might leave.
Yeah, San Jose is probably, to me, the most intriguing Western Conference team to watch today. Obviously, Calgary's been busy filling a lot of holes. But to me, having covered the Western Conference Final 2 years ago when the Sharks ousted the Blues and made their first Stanley Cup Final, it's hard for me to imagine the Sharks without both of those players. Now, I expect one of them is going to leave, but it wouldn't shock me if both of them returned. I mean, those guys have been the face of the franchise, both former captains. And if they don't return, that leaves an awful big hole up front, but it also leaves a lot of money. And even though the Sharks are, you know, reportedly going to be locking down Martin Jones and Mark Edouard Vlasic, it would leave them quite a bit of salary cap space, and they would have two big holes to fill up front. Thornton has been the face of that franchise for as long as we can remember.
Kenny, I'm going to go back to the Jets, and you know, development camp just ended, and it's been so everything's been so congested that sometimes we forget these things because we're already looking ahead to the next thing. But you know, you just watched the prospects skating for the last few days, and you know, yesterday was the scrimmage. Who stood out for you from the new crop, or from the any of the prospects, in fact?
Yeah, and you always have to preface this by saying it's hockey in June, guys, and most of these guys haven't been on the ice since April or May, so. Important not to put too much stock, but definitely Christian Vesalainen caught my eye. He's a big guy that can move. I know it's one thing when a scout tells you he's a big guy that can move, but to see it with your own eyes, for lack of a better term, he just looks like a hockey player. He handles the puck really well. He's a big guy, and it doesn't take a lot of creativity and thinking to envision what kind of player he could be at the NHL level. It's not going to be probably not going to be next year, but. 2-3 years down the road, this is a guy that looks like he could be a real good NHL contributor. Other guys that have come along over the years, you know, I think Mason Appleton is one of those, late round guys who could make an impact. He's going to be the captain of the Michigan State Spartans this year. Eric Foley is a guy who, catches your attention. He's going to probably play at least one more year at Providence College. But these are guys that you would expect to be joining the Moose in the next year or two. Michael Spacek, Dave, you saw him a lot at the end of the Moose season in those four games. I think he's an exciting player, has a lot of skill. And on the back end, Sammy Nuku, he's caught our attention for his skating ability ever since he arrived. Not a lot known about him because he's a late-round pick who's been playing overseas. But I think Sammy Nuku is going to have a very solid season with the Moose. Obviously, there will be some growing pains, but this is a guy who's played professional hockey for the better part of the last three seasons and extremely mobile, which is the number one quality for all young defensemen. And he's got great vision and hockey smarts, so he'll be a guy to watch during the upcoming season with the Moose.
Ken Wiebe, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kenny, it was July 7th last year that the Jets elected to sign Matthew Perreault to a 4-year contract extension. You mentioned in a previous answer Brian Little. We know that Jacob Trouba, they're both eligible for extensions as of July 1st, along with some other players. Who's the priority for the Jets to get done, and do you expect them to sign one of these guys early on in this, they're not free agents, but they're early on in the window where they can sign guys to contract extensions?
Definitely, I think Brian Little is a priority, and not that Jacob Trouba is not, but guys, I've been quite adamant on my opinion on this matter. It has nothing to do with whether or not Jacob Trouba wants to be here whatsoever. This is a player that, if you want to be paid like a number one defenseman, there's no rush for him to sign. Jacob Trouba probably needs a 45-point season or a 50-point season in order to get eight over eight. So I don't think that has anything to do with his intentions long-term. I don't expect any drama with Trouba this summer. I think he is extremely happy with playing almost 25 minutes a game on the right-hand side. But although I understand why fans would want him to sign up long-term the way Mark Scheifele did, there's no rush for him to do so, even if the Jets back the truck up with money for him. I mean, you got to wait and see how the salary cap's going to develop, and he wants to see where the Jets are at after this year. I think the best way to put it is the Jets have another year here to convince Jacob Trouba that they can be a legitimate contender and that they want him to be the centerpiece on the back end. So I think if that happens this year, I think Jacob Trouba will have no problem whatsoever signing a long-term deal at the end of the season. But for those people waiting day by day for Jacob Trouba to sign an extension before the season starts, I think it's going to be a long... I would advise them against that, and not because of any disinterest in Winnipeg whatsoever. I think he's extremely happy with his role, and for a guy who wants to be a number one defenseman, he saw last year that he was already taking that role. So I think, like I said, it'll be drama-free, but I would not expect a contract extension for Jacob Trouba.
Weber, a couple more questions for you here. You mentioned earlier that the Jets may sign a veteran bottom six forward later this morning, afternoon. Do you know if they'd be targeting a center and maybe possibly a guy like a Brian Boyle, who I imagine other teams are also after?
Well, to me, Brian Boyle makes a lot of sense. I mentioned him in my targets list today. And I mean, he does a lot of things well. I understand he's not the fleetest of foot, but this is a guy who knows how to get there. He's an excellent penalty killer. He's very good on draws. He's a great leader. He's been to the Stanley Cup final with both the Rangers and the Lightning. Great teammate. I think he would fit in extremely well, from what I understand. He was very well liked in Toronto going in there with all those young players. But as is always the case, Brian Boyle is going to have options. I mention him because I think he had given some consideration to the Jets before he signed with Tampa. I think he'd be an ideal candidate. But again, a guy like that's always going to have a lot of competition, even though he's in his 30s. But I think he would be an excellent addition. And I'll be very curious to see who else the Jets could be targeting up front. I don't know if it necessarily has to be a center, but because they have Lowry and Kopp and Patan, though who knows if Patan is going to be on the wing this year. So a lot of unanswered questions, but a lot of interesting things ahead to see how much different the depth chart will look come tomorrow or Sunday as it did going into the weekend.
Kenny, last one for you. We circle back to where we started, and that was with the signing of Steve Mason. Not sure you heard our earlier conversation about Steve Mason being sort of at the top of the goaltending stats in terms of save percentage, 5-on-5, but towards the bottom when it comes to shorthanded save percentage over the last few seasons. How concerning is that to you from a Jets perspective, given that the Jets are a team that has struggled with taking too many penalties and not having a very good penalty kill over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, most goalies aren't great 5-on-4, and a lot of the goals have very little to do with them. So I don't put as much stock into that statistic as you guys do. Obviously, the 5-on-5 save percentage, he's very high, and I think that's the one that coaches look at a little bit more. But at the end of the day, you want to stop as many pucks as possible. It's extremely obvious the Jets are going to need to be more disciplined and better on the penalty kill. So I think that's a massive priority for them, along with playing better team defense. But those, I think, are one and the same in terms of the priorities. I'm not concerned about a subpar penalty kill save percentage for him. I think he's going to be rejuvenated by this opportunity. And having something to prove, I don't think that is maybe as accurate as some might believe. But obviously, he's looking for a bounce-back year, and I expect him to be really excited about this opportunity. And after 2 years, if Steve Mason gets the Jets to the playoffs 2 years in a row, I don't think he would have any trouble signing longer term, depending on how things shake out in the crease.
Are you bringing donuts for the assembled media at the rink this morning?
No, guys. Down to 201.4 pounds, so I will not be partaking in any donuts. My summer training is in effect, but there might be some pizza for lunch. I might make an exception there.
Well, you're back to your playing weight. Attaboy, Kenny. Thanks for joining us this morning. Hope it's an entertaining day down at the rink.
Enjoy the rest of the show, boys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Kenny. When we come back, we continue our look with the Central Division, and we'll look at the Pacific Division as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 10 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, free agency preview show here on TSN 1290. Remember, Joel Marcoux and Rick Ralph, They're coming up at 11 a.m. They'll take you right through till 2 o'clock this afternoon, covering all the signings in and around the NHL and, of course, with your Winnipeg Jets. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Happy Canada Day to the Zappias.
There you go. Happy Canada Day to everybody, right? Not just the Zappias, but everybody?
No, well, the Zappias specifically.
Okay. I suspect the Zappias are somewhere
and
around Winnipeg.
To everyone. Yeah.
Frank's listening. Frank already tweeted at us. You know, he's like everybody else. He can send us Twitter or your comments on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Frank, high on the Weirkotch potential to come to Winnipeg, saying he was advocating for that last season. So it might be 12 months later, but, you know, Frank could be right as they talk surrounding Patrick Weirkotch maybe fitting in with the Winnipeg Jets. Want to hear from you? You can send us a text, 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. So, you know, what are your thoughts on the Jets signing of Steve Mason, allegedly? Who do you want to see on the left-handed side of the defense? 1299, the standard messaging rates do apply. We continue our look at the Central Division. We had mentioned the Dallas Stars last segment. We move on to the Minnesota Wild. They made a big trade yesterday, shipping out Marco Scandella and Jason Pominville to the Buffalo Sabres. They get back Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno. Martin Hanzel, who they acquired last year at the trade deadline, is obviously leaving, supposedly going to Dallas. Minnesota Wild are an interesting team in that they've shuffled a number of the pieces around. Did you like their return for Marco Scandella?
Marco Scandella is a good defenseman, and many teams were after Marco Scandella, and when you talk about the Montreal Canadiens, they were one of those teams as well. Obviously, he didn't end up going to Montreal, and they've signed Carl Alzner. We're going to find out, basically, in an hour that it's official that they're signing Carl Alzner, but when you talk about the Minnesota Wild, we know that Jonas Brodin was a player that they were potentially going to move out, and when you look at that Minnesota Wild defense now, and Marco Scandella has obviously been moved out to Buffalo, but Jason Pominville made more money than Tyler Ennis, I believe by about $1 million a year. And Tyler Ennis did not have a good year in Buffalo, but again, one of those teams where everybody seemed to have a bad year, right? So, except maybe our boy Evander Kane. But when you're talking about Tyler Ennis and Marcus Foligno, it was reported that Chuck Fletcher was after Marcus Foligno for some time. Marcus Foligno has actually been, in my opinion, a very underrated player for the Buffalo Sabres. He's more of a 20-25 point guy, but he's a very solid third line guy. And for the Minnesota Wild, I think that's what they were kind of missing, and that's one of the reasons why they didn't go very far in the playoffs. They were kind of missing that grit and that size, and that's what Marcus Foligno gives you. He's a leader in hits in the NHL. And when you talk about Tyler Ennis, a very shifty player, I think a guy that can rebound and get back to that kind of 20-goal, 45, 50-point mark. But Marco Scandella was a top-pairing guy for them, but now what that does, Drew, is that allows them to now ensure Jonas Brodin is going to be on that second pair, and that elevates Matthew Dumba's role, because Matthew Dumba is finally starting to kind of emerge as that top four defenseman that they thought he was going to be when they drafted him in the first round. So for me, that trade, I would probably lean towards Minnesota winning that trade, but Buffalo gets a really good defenseman in Marco Scandella, and that's what Buffalo needed. They're thin on defense.
I think it was a trade that both teams needed. Buffalo, clearly Minnesota had to do a little bit of tinkering.
Rid of Pominville's contract.
Exactly. Yep. They wanted to get rid of that money that was associated with that. And I think, you know, the GM was talking about it. He was talking about how he was targeting Foligno for the last – he was targeting him since last season. So obviously that was an asset, a piece that they wanted for this hockey club, and they got him. So, that, you know, I think it's a trade that probably works out for both sides.
And, Dave, I don't expect Minnesota to be that active. I mean, we know what the big moves that are coming for Chuck Fletcher. It's Mikael Granlund and it's Nino Niederreiter. Re-signing those guys to long-term contracts, Drew, I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Granlund coming off of his career year, wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Granlund gets 7 years.
Moving to the Nashville Predators, Mike Fisher supposedly going to retire, so he might leave their team. I mean, it's, I think, with Mike Fisher, who's UFA, it's either he re-signs for a year or he chooses to retire. The Nashville Predators, their big offseason priority, their big free agent priority is going to have to be re-signing Ryan Johansson, coming off a 61-point season for the Predators. He had 47 assists, so he's certainly a key cog in their offense.
Yeah, they have to re-sign Victor Arvidsson as well.
Yep. Exactly. They are also supposedly hot and heavy into Matt Duchene.
Yep.
Now, they have the defense that that Joe Sakic would want in return, but supposedly David Poile saying, I'm not touching the top four.
No.
So it's there's hard to see a fit there right now for Matt Duchene to go to Nashville, but supposedly David Poile really wants him because they need to fill that role that they lost when James Neal went to the Golden Knights in the expansion draft.
Right. Is Kevin Fiala an option there? I'm not sure. He missed the playoffs there with the injury towards the end. I believe he only played in the first round.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the Nashville Predators, you're right, Drew. They're not trading Roman Josi. They're not trading PK Subban. They're not trading Matthias Ekholm or Ryan Ellis. Why would they? That's the best top four in the NHL, in my opinion. So how are you going to get Matt Duchene out of Colorado? You're probably going to have to offer, you know, a good player plus a draft pick, at least probably a first rounder. And you know that Nashville most likely isn't going to have a high first rounder in the 2018 or 2019 draft because they're a good team.
Right.
So I don't know if, to your point, I don't know if Matt Duchene to Nashville works. Justin Williams is a guy that's been linked to the Nashville Predators on the wing.
Reports this morning that he's likely to re-sign, go back to the Carolina Hurricanes, a team where he won a Stanley Cup a number of years ago.
So I didn't know that. So when you're talking about the Predators, really, you have to replace Mike Fisher now.
Mike Fisher and James Neal.
Right? So, and more so Mike Fisher, mm-hmm. right? Because when you had Ryan Johansson out of the lineup in the Stanley Cup final, Mike Fisher and Colton Sissons were your top two centers, right? So for me, now they have to go out and possibly acquire a center in addition to a veteran winger. So, you know, the Predators are probably going to be more active than we thought they were going to be.
And the one thing is, Adrian Dater said, reported that Joe Sakic said that they weren't going to take scraps. So as you just touched on, you're not trading about four or five pieces for Matt Duchene. They want something significant to, and obviously on the back end, because if you look at Colorado, they need it. That's what they're looking for. So, I mean, you're not getting away with just trading away a couple of little pieces to get a player of Matt Duchene's caliber.
And I imagine, Dave, that they have asked for Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm. I don't think Joe Sakic is foolish enough to ask for Roman Josi or PK Subban, two top defensemen in the NHL. But when you're talking about Matt Duchene, guys, you're talking about an Olympian here.
Yeah.
The thing is, Matt Duchene is a guy that might have had an off year. But again, Colorado and Buffalo were so bad that almost every single player had a down year on those teams. I mean, we saw Colorado five times this year. They were an awful team. They only had 48 points. But as far as I'm concerned, you put Matt Duchene in the right situation, he probably gets 30 goals and 60 points.
I don't disagree with you, but if I'm David Poile, I don't break up my top four defense.
No, I agree.
Not for Matt Duchene.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, you've built your entire identity. You've built your team. You've built a Stanley Cup finalist by being able to trot out that top four night in, night out. And as good of a player as Matt Duchene is, and I like Matt Duchene, I don't know that, you know, the upgrade up front makes up for the downgrade on your defense.
And a guy that stands out to me, Drew, right now that Nashville should be pursuing or maybe has already pursued, Nick Bonino.
Nick Bonino coming over from Pittsburgh, theoretically, too. Matt, he'd fit right up the middle.
He replaces Mike Fisher. And even though Bonino is more of probably a third-line center,
yeah.
I mean, at the very least, he bolsters your top three centers, sure. Losing Fisher. And, you know, we know that they're probably going to look at a winger to replace James Neal.
Quickly, the St. Louis Blues, the last team in the Central Division, they've acquired since the end of the season Braden Schenn from the Philadelphia Flyers and Oscar Sundqvist from the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've lost Jori Lehterä. That's a bit of a salary dump going to Philadelphia. They also give a bunch of high draft picks and Ryan Reeves as well. From the St. Louis Blues, you got getting Braden Schenn. That's a pretty good upgrade.
Oh, I like that trade. You know, Drew, just looking at some of the forwards available, you know, you had Mike Camilleri bought out yesterday.
Yeah.
Scott Hartnell's already been bought out. Some of these forwards, like a team like Nashville, just going back to Nashville, like maybe they bring in a Chris Kunitz. Maybe they bring in a Camilleri or a Scott Hartnell. Another guy, you know, Radim Verbata, Thomas Vanek is out there. I realize that the free agent market right now, guys, is not very good, but there are veteran players that can certainly add to your team.
There is a lot of action happening. It's getting hot and heavy as we approach the 11 o'clock hour when these signings can become
official. Sorry, Drew, I forgot
official.
Who you asked about there before. Who did you ask about before I interrupted you?
About
which team before I
St. Louis Blues there?
Oh, yeah, the Blues.
Yeah.
Back to Braden Schenn. I mean, when you're talking about Braden Schenn, they traded Jori Lehterä. I was never a really big fan of Jori Lehterä. I think they gave him an opportunity to be a top six center for them, and he didn't work out. So Braden Schenn, I think, fits in with kind of the style of their team, speedy, skilled forwards, right? You're talking about guys like Robbie Fabry, Jaden Schwartz, mm-hmm. Alex Steen, Vladimir Tarasenko, of course. So I think Braden Schenn, adding him to the lineup was a really good move. And the big move, I think, for them, again, is going to be a signing of one of their own players, Colton Parayko.
There you go. When we come back, Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press joins us to talk about free agency. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us via Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's where we're going to have information and audio from all the signings, and if we can catch up on everything that happened at development camp, that's IllegalCurve.com. Keep it tuned to there today, all the Jets news that happens as free agency begins in 56 minutes.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined now by Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press. Jonas, good morning. Happy Canada Day to you.
Happy Canada Day, guys. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Getting hot and heavy with all these free agent signings as the official signing period can open up in about 55 minutes time, 12 noon Eastern time, as you join us from Toronto, of course. You know, it's clear that a lot of these signings are just going to become official at this point in time, but it's going to be a hectic day at the very least.
Yeah, the thing about NHL free agency over the years is it's not super interesting in terms of star power. It's a lot of, you know, potential depth players, guys who can help teams get over the hump. And I think we've seen, you know, some ups and downs as far as teams being smarter with how they spend. You know, we saw last summer, you know, Milan Lucic get 7 years and $42 million. You know, we see sometimes today that teams kind of get out of control a little bit. There's a pressure, I think, to do something, to make a splash. And sometimes it's kind of the smaller moves that you can make today that actually make a difference. Like last year, you know, we probably didn't think much of it at the time when Florida signed Jonathan Marchessault for 2 years. And I think it was $1.5 million, or it was $850 per or something like that. And he ends up scoring 30 goals and 51 points. So just because you make this big, you know, splash doesn't necessarily mean you've made your team better. I think you have to be really careful, you know, about how you spend your cap dollars. And so sometimes it's those signings that we kind of overlook that can end up being more impactful.
Jonas, an hour ago, Aaron Ward reported that Carl Alzner and the Montreal Canadiens have agreed on a 5-year deal at roughly $4.5 million a year. What are your thoughts on that signing?
That is exactly the kind of deal that I would be very wary of signing today, because it looks good. You know, you're making a big splash. You're signing a guy who's a solid defensive defenseman, but also one who's creeping towards 30, you know, who doesn't contribute much offensively. We've seen, you know, Montreal make some changes, you know, obviously bringing in Jonathan Drouin. You can't argue with that type of move, but I just think deals like this are the ones that get you in trouble. And you know, being in Toronto, I've seen them. You know, I've seen them firsthand. You know, there was Jeff Finger all those years ago. I think he got 4 years and $14 million. Mike Komisarek, Francois Beauchemin. Like, when you sign those types of guys, really defensive defensemen who don't give you much offensively, who, you know, are kind of creeping towards that age where they are less effective and less helpful, they kind of scream like, you know, potential buyout down the line. So as much as I like Carl Alzner right now, I don't really love that contract. But, you know, Montreal's in a tough spot. You know, they're trying to win. They've got all these pressure points on them, you know, with Carey Price and his contract status. And, you know, you look at the core of that team, you know, Shea Weber, they kind of have to figure out a way to win now. And so I can understand why they'd try to make this move. It's just not one I'd make.
You know, Jonas, you touched on a little bit earlier with your answer to Drew, but, you know, the NBA is like Thunderdome when it comes to their free agency. The NHL is a little more, a little less exciting, as you just said. Do you think that the NHL would be better served if stars were on the move more frequently than they are?
I don't know. You know, I obviously wrote about this earlier in the week, and I'm not sure I reached a conclusion. I talked to different people and kind of came away with, I can see the ups and I can see the good and I can see the bad of having more stars on the move. Like the NBA is year-round excitement. You know, there's so much intrigue over stars potentially changing places. They move all the time. Like last night, Paul George gets traded to Oklahoma City. It's just constant in the NBA. And in the NHL, you don't have that. And obviously, a big part of that is teams lock up their young players as soon as they can and never let them get to unrestricted free agency. Like Sidney Crosby will never be available to the market. His contract goes until, I believe, 2025, when he'll be turning 38. So he just won't be available. Alex Ovechkin, same thing. Connor McDavid, you know, will never be in a position where he can choose, you know, where he wants to go. And part of that is his choice, and part of that is just the team making sure that he never gets to a point where he can consider moving. And so would the NHL be better off with more stars moving? Maybe, you know, because there would be more intrigue. You'd have, you know, players like McDavid, Crosby, Ovechkin potentially in play, in play for teams like New York, Toronto, Chicago, whoever. And yet, you know, the NBA has also crafted rules to try to keep stars from bolting their teams. So I don't know what the perfect system is, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the start of NHL free agency. Officially gets underway 50 minutes from now. Of course, many of the signings have already been reported. Kevin Weeks, Jonas, reporting that Kevin Shattenkirk is heading to the New York Rangers, 4 years, just under $7 million per season, $6.9 million per season. There's a lot of, you know, Shattenkirk has been tied to the East Coast of the U.S. for many years now. Are you surprised that the Rangers end up being his landing space, and your thoughts on the dollar value involved in that signing?
I'm not surprised that it's New York. You know, New York tends to be active today. They're also a team that's kind of in a built-to-win-now mode. He's someone who helps you win now. I sort of am okay with the contract if it's 4 years, because he is 28. He does help your power play immensely. He does, you know, generate a ton of points from the back end. I'm not sure, you know, he's not a number one defenseman. I think we know that. But he's someone who can slot onto your first or second pair and really help you in one specific way. And that's okay. You know, and the fact that they didn't go super long, I think I'm a little bit fine with, because, you know, for someone like that, that's when you start getting in trouble, when you give these guys who are approaching 30, 7 years. You know, we're going to see, you know, like we look at what's happening in Edmonton and kind of the cap problems, not problems, the cap realities that they're going to have to face when they eventually do sign McDavid, when they eventually do sign Leon Draisaitl. Like that contract that you give out to Milan Lucic, that's 7 years, that starts to hurt you as he creeps into his 30s and becomes less effective than he is now. So I think the fact that they're signing Shattenkirk potentially for 4 years is okay, because he does help them right away. And by the time he starts really ticking downward, you know, he'll be up. But the only thing I'd add to that is he didn't look great in the playoffs for Washington. So we'll see how that shakes out for them.
Jonas, what are you expecting to happen with Alex Radulov of the Montreal Canadiens? He had a great year playing almost the full season, put up 18 goals and 54 points, and he was excellent in the playoffs as well. But apparently he wants a 6 or 7 year deal with the Montreal Canadiens. Where do you see him going, or do you see him maybe still staying in Montreal?
Oh, I don't know where he'll go, but there's a few things that I think are interesting with him. One, there's not a lot of guys who, like, you can look at and say, that guy for sure is going to help me offensively. Like, you look at the forwards that are available, it's not much. You know, it's Patrick Marleau, it's Joe Thornton, it's Justin Williams. There's just not a lot of guys that you look at and say, okay, that guy for sure I can count on 20 goals, 50 points. And I think you'd probably, if you were ranking guys in terms of offense, if he's not at the top, he's right near the top. And so I think there's an advantage for him to that, in that, you know, he can be one of those guys who teams can count on if they're going to sign for offense. But the other side with it is he's Alex Radulov. You know, teams know his history. He has kind of a sketchy past in the NHL, rightly or wrongly. You know, he left, obviously, to the KHL. He came back. He had a good year. He was a popular guy in Montreal. But there are teams, I would imagine, that would see some risk in signing Alex Radulov. So I think the market can potentially work for him, but I think his past will probably kind of keep that market slimmer than it might have been, you know, had he been someone else who was available in this market where there's just not that many guys who you can count on for offense.
Well, speaking of guys you can count on for offense, Ilya Kovalchuk is another player that yeah, is being talked about right now, and now the rumor is that he won't be doing anything until Monday. But one of the teams that he's been linked to potentially, or he has an interest in going to, is Toronto. So do you think he comes back to the NHL, and how likely do you think there is any interest in Toronto for him?
Well, I think Toronto has to be careful, and I think it's kind of in the same ballpark as Edmonton, in that if you can get Ilya Kovalchuk on a two-year deal, a one- or a two-year deal, maybe max three, okay, you know, if the cap number is reasonable, you know, he's going to help you offensively. Obviously, you look at the numbers he put up in the KHL, they're great. You look at the numbers he put up before he left for the KHL, he is what he is. Like, he is a scorer. He is a guy who's going to help you offensively. But for a team like Toronto, they have this cap reality that they have to come to terms with. You know, they're going to have to sign Austin Matthews next year, potentially, to a deal that's going to be just shy of whatever Connor McDavid ends up getting. They have to, you know, sign William Nylander. They have to sign Mitch Marner. They have a lot of young players who are going to command big second contracts. So you can't afford to get yourself into a situation where you sign someone like that long term. I just don't think. Like, it's not something that I would do, just because you have to try to navigate the cap, and you also have to try to find guys who are going to fit your window of cup contention. And Ilya Kovalchuk on a short-term deal helps a team like Toronto, you know, break into that cup conversation. But long-term, I'm not sure he matches up with kind of their group, you know, who are all really super young. And you want to try to maximize, you know, your cup window as long as you can. And so is he a fit somewhere on a short-term deal for a team like Toronto? Sure. But longer-term, I would think they stay away from that.
Jonas, we'll let you go on this last question. It appears as though Jaromir Jagr's time with the Florida Panthers has come to an end. Certainly doesn't have the foot speed, but, I mean, this is a guy who still put up 46 points last year in the NHL. Where could you see him ending up, or do you think that this is unbelievably the end of the line for the great Jagr?
Oh, I still think he'll find a job somewhere. Like, would you be surprised? And when we've heard George McPhee say that they don't plan to be active in free agency, but, like, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, just bring in Jaromir Jagr to Vegas at the end of his career, maybe. I mean, you know, George McPhee, you know, they've kind of built their team a little bit to try to be better long-term as opposed to trying to be good right now. I don't think they're going to be very good in Vegas, but, like, something like that makes sense. He can still play. Like, he can still help you. Like, I go back to offense, he can still help your offense. Is he going to be the guy we saw, you know, even 2 years ago who, you know, puts up close to, I think, 70, 80 points? Probably not. But he's still someone you can stick on a line who's going to grind down low, who's tough to move, who can help you offensively. So I think he won't have any trouble finding a home. It's just like when there's not a lot of offense, you're going to have to find it wherever you can.
Jonas Siegel covers the NHL for the Canadian Press. Jonas, hopefully it'll be a fun day for you, and I assume you're parked at the Air Canada Center or thereabouts, covering all the different signings as they occur.
It's going to be fun. Happy Canada Day, boys.
Likewise, Jonas. Thanks for doing this.
No problem.
Quickly before we go to break, a couple of news and notes. As you mentioned, Nick Bonino, a good candidate to go to the Nashville Predators. Darren Dreger reporting that Nick Bonino is, in fact, going there. It's either a 4 or 5 year deal. Not yet sure, but it sounds like Nick Bonino is going to sign with the Nashville Predators. And both Frank Saravelli and Larry Brooks have poured cold water onto the idea that Kevin Shattenkirk is definitely going to the Rangers, both of them saying that rumored, the report that Kevin Weeks came out with is not yet official, not yet necessarily true. So the Kevin Shattenkirk sweepstakes is still ongoing.
Yeah, and the other two teams, Drew, that have been linked to signing Kevin Shattenkirk are the New Jersey Devils and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not the Rangers, it's most likely going to be Tampa Bay or New Jersey.
That's right. Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense there. There's supposedly he had a deal there to go there, I believe it was last season, that ended up getting nixed because he wouldn't sign a contract extension. But Kevin Shattenkirk on the back end for the Tampa Bay Lightning would look really good there.
Yeah, and reportedly Dan Girardi is also going to sign with the Lightning.
And all of a sudden, you're back end there. You got Hedman, you got Strahlman, you got Shattenkirk, you got Girardi, you got Sergachev. So, you know, you can ease Sergachev into the lineup there.
Stevie Y knows what he's doing.
Stevie Y does know what he's doing. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Pacific Division and the free agency situation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. Going to be a lot of free agency movement, so you know if you need to get your jersey all changed up, maybe your favorite team, you know, you got a, I don't know, a big Jagger Panthers jersey, maybe you need to get that switched around. Keener Jerseys can take care of all that for you.
As I said to Ezzy, he can has a Mason uniform. He can get it. All he needs to do is maybe switch those numbers.
Exactly. And all of a sudden, your Chris Mason jersey becomes a Steve Mason jersey.
Yeah, I don't expect Steve Mason to wear number 50 like Chris Mason did, but
it would be convenient for you if you
would. Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. 4-year deal for Nick Bonino. Dreger just amended his recent his recent tweet.
And that's a great signing for the Nashville Predators because it looks like Mike Fisher is retiring. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great signing for them. And we expect Nashville to also sign a winger to replace James Neal. So I don't think David Poile is done here, Drew.
Let's move on to the Pacific Division. We start with the Anaheim Ducks, where the rumored acquisition is going to be a backup goaltender by the name of Jonathan Bernier.
Yep.
Of course, he spent the last number of years... Ryan Miller, not Jonathan Bernier. Jonathan Bernier was with Anaheim. He's going to Colorado. Ryan Miller going from Vancouver to Anaheim. I like that. I like Ryan Miller in Anaheim. I think gets a real veteran presence there.
His wife's from California.
That makes a lot of sense.
He wanted to stay on the West Coast. Some Jets fans were hoping, Dave, that Ryan Miller might sign with the Jets. But when you're talking about the Ducks, I mean, they re-upped Patrick Eaves to a 3-year deal. So I thought that was a good signing for them because when he came over before the trade deadline, he was excellent playing on a line with Ryan Getzlaff. So I wouldn't expect the Anaheim Ducks to be too active, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they added one or two pieces, maybe a depth defenseman, a depth forward, something like that. I'm not sure if Nate Thompson is coming back, so maybe Brian Boyle is a guy they go after. Mm-hmm. It's tough to say.
Nate Thompson, apparently, according to Twitter, is going to Ottawa.
2 years, $1.65 million per season for Nate Thompson to the Ottawa Senators. That's according to Aaron Ward, just being tweeted out right now.
Yeah, so the Ducks, I mean, you know, they lost Shea Theodore. They lost Clayton Stoner to the Vegas Golden Knights. For them, I mean, they could go after a defenseman because we know that Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm are going to miss the early part of the season. So maybe they go after a defenseman, but I wouldn't expect them to go after any of the huge names out there. But we'll see. I mean, does a guy like Alex Radulov appeal to them? They have to wait and see what happens in Montreal. But aside from that, I mean, a guy like Jaromir Jagr, would the Ducks be interested in a guy like Jagr? Well, I'm not sure.
You know, Anaheim doesn't play much of a speed game. They are more physical. So maybe, you know, with Jagr working down low there, the could make a little bit of sense. And, you know, if you have to move from Florida, moving to Southern California isn't the worst trade-off in the world.
And when you're talking about free agent defensemen, Dave, I mean, we've gone over some of the candidates for the Winnipeg Jets, but Trevor Daley is reportedly going to the Detroit Red Wings, which I think is a good signing for the Red Wings. But there aren't that many top free agent defensemen out there, but that's where Anaheim's strength is on defense, even with Lindholm and Vatanen missing the early part of the season. Josh Manson has emerged. Brandon Montour has emerged. So for me, it's probably going to be a veteran forward. And as you mentioned, we know Ryan Miller is going to be signed there. It's going to be announced in about half an hour.
Yeah. The only signing we do know is that they signed Moose assistant coach Mark Morrison
to
be the assistant coach under Randy Carlisle.
Exactly. Mark Morrison, assistant coach with the Moose last year, heading to Anaheim.
I'll throw out one other name, Drew, for Anaheim because I'm doing so well with the Nick Bonino to Nashville
that I nailed there. Don't push your luck.
Mike Camilleri. He might be 35 years old, but maybe Mike Camilleri is a fit there to play on the third line of the Anaheim Ducks. I got to think that someone's going to sign Camilleri. I mean, for me, he's still a guy that can pop in 20 goals for you.
Especially on a veteran team, Mike Camilleri makes a lot of sense. Elliot Friedman just tweeting this out that Chris Thorburn, who of course was taken by the Vegas Knights off the Jets roster, but who is a UFA, getting some interest supposedly from the St. Louis Blues.
Well, you know what? That could be a replacement for Ryan Reeves.
That's exactly right.
Right? So, I mean, if Thorbs ends up signing with the St. Louis Blues, Dave and I are going to be the happiest two guys in Winnipeg.
The Arizona Coyotes, they were busy in the trade market leading up to free agency, acquiring Nicholas Chalmerson from the Chicago Blackhawks, Derek Stepan, and Antti Raanta from the New York Rangers.
Unfortunately, they still don't have a coach.
Well, they still don't have a coach because Dave Tippett and Andrew Barroway, the new sole owner of the Coyotes, decided to go their separate ways. It sounds like things weren't going so well in the front office of the Arizona Coyotes. But the Coyotes, you know, they're certainly a better team by acquiring those three players. I don't know that they're, I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're an interesting team to maybe keep an eye on as free agency unfolds today.
Yeah, Drew, I wouldn't expect, again, them to be one of the more active teams. We've talked about who we'd expect to be the more active teams, they wouldn't be one of them. And that's because, as you just mentioned, they already made their moves, right? So if you're the Arizona Coyotes, I don't think they're going to be a very good team next year. I don't know if you guys would agree or disagree with that, but I don't think they're a playoff team next year. So if you're the Arizona Coyotes, you know you have younger players in the system coming up. Dylan Strome is going to be in the NHL next year. He scored 350 points in the OHL last year. So I don't think he's going to spend another year in the OHL. He actually, in fact, can't spend another year in the Ontario Hockey League. But needless to say, a lot of the young players are going to make an impact with the Arizona Coyotes. You have a guy like Clayton Keller, who's eventually going to be in the NHL. We already know they've got guys like Max Domi, Duclair, Jacob Chychrun. So I don't necessarily know that the Coyotes are going to be in the market for a veteran forward. But if they are, I would imagine it, Dave, to be a bottom six guy. You know, maybe it is a guy like Mike Camilleri or Scott Hartnell, but I would assume that those players at this point in their careers would want to go to a winning team, a team that's going to be in the playoffs. So again, I think it's going to be depth players, if any, for the Coyotes.
The Calgary Flames have a new goaltending tandem. We know they acquired Mike Smith a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
Yesterday, they acquire Eddie Lack from the Carolina Hurricanes.
I really like those
moves. Of course, Travis Hamonic shores up their defense. Yep. They acquired him at the draft. So all of a sudden, you have a Mike Smith, Eddie Lack goaltending tandem. And, I mean, a top four defense that's what up there for with the best in the NHL.
Yeah, Brad Treliving and Brian Burke have done an excellent job reorganizing that decor. And you talk about a couple years ago, Dougie Hamilton being acquired at the draft, and now they've brought in Travis Hamonic. You re-sign Michael Stone. You've got Mark Giordano and TJ Brody there. I mean, their top four, top five defense is excellent. Top five, arguably, in the NHL. And you mentioned Mike Smith and Eddie Lack. I think that's an upgrade over Brian Elliott and Chad Johnson. Mike Smith is a guy who went to the All-Star game last year. You know, he's been a top goaltender in the NHL for a long time. So I really like what Calgary's done. As far as potential moves that they might make, I think at this point it's, again, depth players, third, fourth line winger. Maybe they bring in a depth defenseman, but I don't see them bringing in anybody that is going to play a prominent role on the team.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ez, and I think they made a smart move by getting Chris Versteeg back in the fold, you know, for at least another year.
One-year deal for Versteeg.
1.7, I think it was, right?
Something like that.
And so you've got
Michael Stone.
They re-signed Michael Stone for another 3 years. So, I mean, they're like, people were a little, you know, laughing at the Michael Smith, bringing in Michael Smith, who's a veteran goaltender. But, I mean, again, he played against, in front of not the best defense in Arizona. Put him in front of Calgary's defense, and we'll see behind Calgary's defense, I should say, and we'll see what kind of goalie he is and what kind of season he has in Calgary. And you have to expect the Calgary Flames could be a very interesting team to watch this season.
Well, if Mike Stone is on your third pairing defense, you know, this get him for 3 years and $10.5 million.
And he will be.
And he will be, because their top four, I mean, that's a loaded defense in Calgary.
Yep.
I mean, and then you factor in, of course, the skill they have up front.
Yeah.
Calgary's
a good team.
Calgary is a very good team. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Calgary is going to be a team to watch next year.
I agreed wholeheartedly. The Edmonton Oilers, they made a couple moves. There was the Jordan Eberle trade going to the New York Islanders in exchange for Ryan Strome. They also bought out Benoit Pouliot. And then the big deal today is the expectation that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in the next, you know, week, maybe today, maybe week, 10 days, whatever it's going to be, get mammoth contract extensions from the Oilers.
And, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I don't see the Edmonton Oilers being that active in free agency. If anything, it's going to be to add a bottom six forward or maybe a depth defenseman. I mean, they're set as far as forwards go, really. They aren't losing too many players from last year, right? So, I wouldn't expect Peter Chiarelli to be that active, as you mentioned, Drew. Mm-hmm. I mean, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, getting those players under contract long-term is the priority, and Chiarelli mentioned that it was the priority after the season ended.
Yeah, and, I mean, when that's your biggest problem is signing Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, you're doing okay at that point in time. Los Angeles Kings, they're not expected to be active because they don't really have any cap space. Hard to see that the LA Kings are going to be a team that's improving at this point in the next season.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because they should be active because, you know, you talk about the biggest need in LA is for offense, right? Mm-hmm. And they're set on defense. I mean, sure, you could maybe add in a defenseman, but as we've talked about throughout the show, guys, this isn't a good free agent class. So there aren't that, after Carl Alsner, after Kevin Shattenkirk, there aren't really any top four defensemen, right? You're talking about guys like Michael Delzato, who reportedly is going to Vancouver. You're talking about guys like Dmitry Kulikov, Trevor Daley, who's going to Detroit. So how many really good defensemen are there out there on the free agent market for LA? So, you know, if I'm LA, I would be interested in guys like Justin Williams, or I'd be interested in guys like Mike Camilleri. Williams is obviously going to Carolina, but the point being that they need guys that can chip in offense. So, again, if the LA Kings do acquire someone, it's most likely not going to be a guy that costs them much.
San Jose Sharks, big questions there. Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. Do you think that they end up re-signing there, or are both those guys destined for other destinations?
I've thought all along that Thornton and Marleau are staying there. It's just weird to think of the San Jose Sharks, especially without Marleau, because Marleau's been there his entire career. Thornton was obviously acquired from the Boston Bruins. But when you talk about Thornton and Marleau, I mean, it would be surprising if either of those guys went anywhere.
Darren Dreger, as of 1 minute ago, tweeted the following: still working on the details, but Winnipeg is the likely destination for Dmitry Kulikov. So one more time, this is according to TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger. Winnipeg, as in the Jets, is the likely destination for left-handed defenseman Dmitry Kulikov. So that'll be something that we keep a close eye on to see if that becomes official shortly after 11 a.m. this morning. But it sounds, by the sounds of it, both Steve Mason will fill the goaltender position for the Winnipeg Jets, and according to Darren Dreger, Dmitry Kulikov will fill a left-handed defense spot for the Jets.
Yeah, and, you know, that's an upgrade. You know, I've mentioned it. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of his game, but obviously I'm not the general manager of the Jets. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Kulikov, we mentioned it earlier. He's a former first-round pick of the Florida Panthers back in 2009. He's a guy that does have some offensive upside. He's at 26 years old right now, and, you know, even though he didn't have a very good year with the Buffalo Sabres last year, he is a guy who I think can fit in nicely on that third pair.
Injury plagued year last year with Buffalo. He was acquired in a trade for Mark Pisick, if I recall correctly, and then during the exhibition season, he actually ran into the door. The door was open, I think, on the Sabres bench, and he got body checked into it, and that sort of set his season into a bit of a spiral. So the Jets are banking on Dmitry Kulikov. It's a worthwhile gamble with a guy who's only 26 years old to see if they can recapture, because he was a decent player in Florida a couple years ago.
And Dave, I'll be interested to see how many years Kulikov signs for. I would expect it to be 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, as soon as we get that additional information, assuming it happens before 11 a.m., we'll bring it to you here. And of course, Rick Ralph and Joel Marcoux right after us will bring you all the latest breaking news as well.
We were talking about the San Jose Sharks. Sounds like Patrick Marleau is down to four teams, and one of those teams is the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, wouldn't that be interesting? When we come back, Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us to talk about goaltenders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the official start of NHL free agency, we welcome you back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or the book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. If you're looking to swing the sticks this weekend, this long weekend, we highly recommend Bell Acres Golf and Country Club.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Kevin Woodley. You know Kevin's work from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. Kevin, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us, and happy Canada Day to you.
Yeah, to you guys too. It's busy already, eh?
It certainly is busy already. Kevin, we're going to get your thoughts and opinions on some of the different goaltending moves throughout the NHL. We, of course, start here in Winnipeg, where the expectation is that the Jets are going to sign Steve Mason to a contract as of 11 a.m. this morning. You know, your thoughts on Steve Mason and the potential fit here with the Winnipeg Jets, and in a, you know, maybe in a 1A, 1B situation alongside Connor Hellebuck. Is that a good fit in your mind?
I guess it depends on term, right? I mean, that's what this is going to all come down to. No secret that I like what the Jets have coming. I like Connor Hellebuck. I like Eric Comrie. I like them to be NHL regulars. So the question, of course, is how many years did you have to give Steve Mason to get him to come there? And frankly, it's probably a year too late. This is what you needed last year with Connor Hellebuck. You needed somebody who would allow him to sort of grow into that role. One of the sort of best jobs I've seen of bringing a goaltender along was Corey Schneider with Roberto Luongo. It was 3 years in the A, maybe a little over right down there, but then into a 25-start situation where you're still working with the goalie coach, still making the changes in your game in practice, because those things are all grouped through repetition. Difficult. By the time you get into a game, you want it to be instinctual. So 25 games in the first year, and then in the second year, they were around 25, 30 again, but they were tougher games. They were tougher starts. They were more meaningful. There were starts in Boston. They put him in tougher roles. Again, just take that next step and then move, if he ends up moving it into a number one job elsewhere. I think ideally that's what you would have liked last year. I think Mason could be a good fit for that to start that transition this year. The irony here is that Steve Mason is the poster child for too much too soon in Columbus, right? Like, this is what you don't want to happen to Connor Hellebuck is what happened to Steve Mason in Columbus, where he had a great start as a rookie. The league scouted him after that great start. They started to figure some things out, and there were some growing pains. But by the time they recognized those growing pains maybe needed to be solved elsewhere, he required waivers, and they couldn't send him down to the American Hockey League without fear of losing him. And so he ended up in this bad situation in Columbus. And by the end of it, I've talked to Steve about this before. By the end of it in Columbus, he had actually made strides in his game that you would see pay off with the Flyers, where he has been pretty good, really good at times. But he said, and he still believes, that no matter those strides in Columbus, it never would have worked there, because the ball had gotten rolling downhill and the snowball had gotten too big and was moving too fast in Columbus to really stop it. So, when a guy struggles early like that, you have a breakdown of trust that can occur, where the defenseman doesn't, the D-men don't, and the teammates in front of them don't really trust the goaltender. The goaltender doesn't really trust the system. And everybody's starting to try and do each other's jobs, and rather than just worrying about their own job. And Mason had hit that point in Columbus where, whether it was the fans on him or those types of breakdowns where that trust had just disintegrated, he knew, and he'll tell you to this day, it was never going to work there. But as soon as he moved to Philadelphia, things were fine. A few depth changes, he simplified his game, and he's been pretty good ever since. So that's what you didn't want to have happen to Connor Hellebuck, and I think bringing in a guy like Mason can help you sort of slow that process. Just, again, a matter of how many years and how, where's that line between slowing that development and stagnating it.
Well, Kevin, you mentioned some of the strides Steve Mason made while in Columbus. What have you noticed, as someone who studies goaltenders, what have you noticed about Steve Mason's play in Philadelphia the last 2 or 3 years?
Well, I think the first thing that Jeff Reese did, and he was the goalie coach at the time in Philadelphia, was he simplified the game for Steve. In Columbus, he made strides in his game, but he struggled with reads. You would look at a goal, they would look at a goal with him after the game and ask him where he would, where he should be in this situation, and he'd tell you one thing, and then you'd look at the tape, and he'd be 3 feet out in a different spot. So, I really do think he struggled with sort of situational depth, and in Philadelphia they simplified it by basically reeling him in and putting him in the blue ice. And early on, he added some depth as he went on, but that first year under Reese, he pretty much played from the goal line. He really played a deeper game. So simplifying those reads for him, simplifying the game for him, allowed him to sort of utilize the improved tools. His post play was cleaned up in Columbus when Ian Clark took over as a goalie coach. Some of his sort of stance and tracking issues got better. All those things, he was no longer thinking on top of that. So that was the biggest thing. I mean, the tools have always been there. You saw it that first year in Columbus. The problem was, if you really looked at that first year in Columbus, he was too reliant on the tool and not consistent enough with sort of positioning and technical work. All of that stuff has gotten better over the years, and now that allows sort of those athletic tools to shine through without becoming over-reliant on them. And the question will be, for a goalie who does, for the most part, still play deeper, to simplify with the Reds in Winnipeg, where, I'll be honest, for all the talk about goaltending Winnipeg over the past couple of years, let's not lose sight of the fact that, in my mind, they have been Dallas North in terms of defensive structure in front of their goaltenders.
You know, Kevin, one player that may benefit from this move, although I agree with you that it probably should have, the goaltending in Winnipeg should have been changed last year, but is Eric Comrie, who's a player I watch a lot with the Manitoba Moose, but he really will have an opportunity to kind of develop within the AHL structure as opposed to being rushed too quickly to the NHL. So one is, that, you know, talk about the benefit for him. And secondly, you know, is there a negative from his perspective that he sees this as, you know, kind of a stalling in his progression?
You know, I haven't talked to him, so I don't know. I think if you have had a chance to talk to Eric over the years, you'll understand the character and how well he thinks things out, and that he's probably not a guy who's going to react overly emotionally to this type of thing. Mm-hmm. I will say, however, that, you know, talking to him after the World Championships, even though he didn't play, there was an opportunity there on a daily basis to see, you know, like he said, not just NHL shots, but, you know, a roster full of, Maybe not, you know, World Cup, Olympic level, but, you know, Claude Giroux and Wayne Simmonds being tight and Ryan O'Reilly, and to really face them on a daily basis in practice and at morning skates, and to see what those shots were like, to early on in the process get exposed a little bit by some of those shots, but to recognize quickly what the fix was, and be able to adjust to the point where by the end he was comfortable seeing a lot of these great shooters with open looks in practice. And so I think he's a lot closer than this deal would indicate. I understand their hesitation to rush things after what happened with Hellebuck, but at the same time, like, I think Eric's ready for that first step, that 25 games in the backup role, if you use Schneider as a comparison. I think he's there now. So holding him down in the minor leagues, I guess I would say you kind of hope they have a better team maybe in the AHL, because it hasn't been good down there. And if you continue to expose a guy too much to bad teams and playing behind bad teams, you do worry a little bit about the habits that could build down there. Bad defensive teams typically force you to cheat a little bit. I don't know that Eric's gotten there yet or that that's been a problem. I don't think so. But, yeah, that is one of the concerns I have about this. And the other part, guys, is, you know, you mentioned Steve Mason in a 1A, 1B role. And that seems to be, and this is why I'm going to be interested to see the term here. Because I can break down what happens on the ice. I can show you technical details. I can show you delays in their game. I can show you inefficiencies. I can show you things that they do well on the ice. What I can't tell you is what they're thinking between the ears. I can break down between the pipes, but between the ears is, you know, let's be honest, and that's a major part of this game. So we look for signs. We don't have absolutes, but we look for signs. And in the case of Mason, if you look at his time in Philadelphia, the one thing he seems to have struggled with is uncertainty. Uncertainty over a contract. As soon as he gets an extension, he's great. This year, heading into unrestricted free agency, you know, both him and Newworth sort of struggled with that, who's the starter, and frankly, a lot of lack of support that was puzzling at times in Philadelphia for him, where, you know, from the outside in, it sure looked like he should have been the guy, and they didn't seem to ever want to commit to that. And his play did tail off a little bit this year. So that's the interesting part about this role. He is better when he sort of has that support and when there isn't that uncertainty surrounding his situation, when he knows what his role is. So if it's an open competition and the expectation is, you know, you're grooming or you're working with, or Connor Hellebuck is pushing you or challenging you for starts, and it's an open competition, I'll be interested to see how he reacts to that, because he's been at his best in the past when he hasn't had to worry about that type of environment.
Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine joins us on the program. Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. Of all the UFA goaltenders that are on the market or that, you know, are expected to be signed today, you know, does Steve Mason to the Jets, is that the best fit in your mind? Assume that the contract terms are reasonable, let's say, you know, 1 year, 2 years, somewhere around in that range. Does Mason to the Jets, was that the one that sort of made the most sense to you of all the potential signings?
No, I'd be honest with you. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. Like, it does make a lot of sense, with the one caveat being what I just talked about in terms of uncertainty. But to me, the move today that's coming that makes the absolute most sense on so many different levels, and including the fact it'll be a low term and low cap hit because of this, is Ryan Miller to the Anaheim Ducks. And frankly, I've said on one of my weekly appearances on the TSN station in Edmonton that this was coming for 2 weeks. I'm not surprised by it. It makes sense for Ryan personally with his wife and young son Bodie being in Los Angeles for most of the year where she works as an actress. But what a lot of people will miss here, I think this move needs to be made for John Gibson's future. I think that if Anaheim had got off the pot and made this move at the trade deadline, as much as I like Jonathan Bernier as a goalie, I think that we could be talking about the Ducks having been in the Stanley Cup final. That's how important I think this move could have been for Anaheim. It's not just, there are things in Gibson's game that if he doesn't change, he will not be a consistent, healthy goaltender ever. And Ryan Miller is a goaltender who knows his body as well as any goalie I've ever met. And while I wouldn't say he's an outgoing, here kid, wrap his arm around the shoulder and guide you, if John Gibson is paying any attention, if they're finally able to get through to him that maybe some of these things need to change, because the indication is that that hasn't been the case in Anaheim, that you know, for all the raw skill and talent, he really hasn't taken to any direction, and he's been allowed to get away with that, frankly, a little too long because an organization at the top has pushed and believed in him and sort of let everyone know he is the guy for too long. If he can't learn that from Ryan Miller, if he can't see the work that Miller puts in, then his career may be destined to be what we saw this year, which is he's absolutely capable of brilliance, but there is almost certainly no way he can stay healthy, and consistency will be an issue. There are just things in his game in terms of biomechanics of his movement, his save execution, and his tracking that put too much stress on his body. It, again, when we talk about videos, these are all things I can show in video. And there are things that Ryan Miller recognizes and does in his game that I think the Ducks are hoping John Gibson will finally recognize need to change in his.
Kevin Woodley covers the NHL for NHL.com. You can also read his work at In Goal Magazine. Kevin, appreciate your time this morning and your insight. Thanks very much for doing this.
Yeah, back to the writing, boys. It's all coming fast and furious while we're talking.
Happy Canada Day, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank
you,
Kevin.
See you guys.
Take care. When we come back, one final segment, then we turn things over to Joel Marcoux and Rick Ralph, who will bring it home as free agency kicks off in 10 minutes' time. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Free agency begins in about 7 minutes' time. The segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Even though it's a holiday, if you're looking for something to do tonight, Rumors is open for one show, 7:45 p.m. tonight. So if you're looking for something to, you know, sort of pass that time between before the fireworks begin, Rumors Comedy Club, where you can have some fireworks of laughter instead. So tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com, and then get tickets for all the great upcoming performances at Rumors Comedy Club. But you can do that online at RumorsComedyClub.com. To recap everything where we're at thus far on Saturday morning, expectations are that the Winnipeg Jets will sign Steve Mason to a contract when free agency officially opens in about 7 minutes' time. So we did know that sort of coming into this morning that it's likely that Steve Mason will be in a goaltending tandem or a 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it, with Connor Hellebuck next season with the Winnipeg Jets. Additionally, Bob McKenzie, Darren Dreger, the TSN Hockey Insiders are saying Dmitry Kulikov is now expected to go to Winnipeg. He's expected to become a member of the Winnipeg Jets. He will fill that gap on the left side of the Jets defense. Kulikov, a guy who had some success with the Florida Panthers, where he spent the bulk of his career. Last year, he was with the Buffalo Sabres, where he certainly had a down year, injury-plagued. A bad year last year with the Florida Panthers. So the Jets are hoping to recapture some of his past glory, as much as glory as it was, I guess, with the Florida Panthers, as Dmitry Kulikov expected to come to Winnipeg to be one of the Jets' defensemen on the left side of the D.
Yeah, 26 years old, guys, and he makes the Jets' D better, right? We don't know if he's going to be a second-pairing defenseman or a third-pairing defenseman. We know that Josh Morrissey and Toby Enstrom are ahead of him on the depth chart, but at the end of the day, this makes the Jets' D better. And the biggest needs for Chevy going into free agency was acquire a top goaltender and acquire a left-side defenseman. He's done both here. Well, it's expected, but we're going under the assumption that the Kulikov deal is going to be announced shortly within the next 10 or 15 minutes here. So, you know, Kulikov is a guy that makes them better, and now it pushes a guy like Ben Chiarot, who's been a third-pairing left-side guy, right, Dave? So I think Chevy has done well here. Were there other defensemen available? Sure, there were guys like Patrick Wierkoch out there, but, you know, when you're talking about Wierkoch and Kulikov, those are players of the same ilk, right? So it makes them better at the end of the day when you're talking about Mason and Kulikov, and that's what Chevy needed to do, and he's done that here.
Yeah, I think exactly right. What have we been talking about since the season ended? The Jets needed to shore up their defense and shore up their left side defense. So it appears they've done that for now. And I mean, again, it's not done because, look, we saw what happened with the Jets last year. You had a lot of injuries. So you have to plan. You can't plan for an 82-game injury-free season. So you have to plan. You have to make accommodations in your team, knowing the depth that you have. You know, you've got defensemen that show that they could jump up. But, I mean, again, you need the team to not just be able to tread water. You need to be able to excel.
And, Dave, we're expecting the Kulikov contract to be 1, 2, maybe 3 years. I would be surprised if it was 4 or 5 years, Drew. So if you're signing,
I'd be surprised if it was 3, to be honest.
Right. So it's most likely going to be a 1, 2, maybe 3 year deal. And so you're signing him short term. He's 26 years old. So it's not like you're going to be tying up a lot of cap space, knowing that guys like Brian Little and Nikolai Ehlers have to be signed soon.
These are upgrades that needed to happen. Are they, you know, perhaps they're not exactly what everybody wanted, but I think people had to be realistic with their expectations.
By the way, I should throw in Jacob Trouba in there
as well. Of course, yeah.
More importantly, on defense.
Yes, certainly. But I think these are upgrades. You know, he gets credit for upgrading the team, yep, where in past years he stood pat. And he couldn't stand pat again this year. So we'll see how it all plays out. Free agency officially begins in a few minutes' time. Joel Marcoux and Rick Ralph will bring you the latest coverage here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Ken Wieb. A big thank you to Jonas Siegel. And a big thanks to Kevin Woodley for joining us. Big thanks to all of our sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. No show next Saturday. We're celebrating Ezzy's bachelor party. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Rick Ralph and Joel Marcoux here on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.